Adventure Box Max presents The Right Wrongdoer, written by Laure Pansiot, illustrated by Clémence Provost. Chapter 1. A Rainy Arrival. I open the window of the train compartment and gaze out at the night. Raindrops fly onto my cheeks. It looks like 1930 is bringing us a rainy spring. I also hope it will bring mysteries, because I, George, am determined to make the most of my stay in Brittany in western France to solve my first case. My real name is Georgina, but I loathe it. I prefer being called George. My parents are scientists, and they have to go to the United States on a mission that will last several months. While they're away, they're leaving me in the capable hands of Granny, my father's mother, who lives in the part of Brittany known as the Coast of Legends. It was after Granny's husband died that she followed her dream of moving close to the ocean, and she settled down in Brittany. It's now pouring with rain. I close the window and sit back down. John, the tutor hired by my parents to oversee my studies during the trip, is dozing opposite me while sitting up as straight as can be. From time to time, his head rolls backwards against the train seat. Ever since girls were given the right to sit the baccalaureate exams, my parents have set their hearts on one thing: for me to graduate from high school with this qualification. So they keep on pushing me to study hard. But I have another dream. When I grow up, I'm only 12 years old, I want to become the first female detective in Paris. At last, John begins to stir. Good timing, given that the locomotive is blowing its steam whistle. We're arriving. The vehicle stops and the station master shouts over the din,
"Disembark here for Kernavan. 5 minutes stop."
On my right, a red brick train station comes into view. It disappears almost immediately, erased by a cloud of smoke and dust. Finally, the train comes to a stop. Then there's a commotion. I jump down onto the platform. It's still bucketing down. When the smoke fades away, I spot my grandmother holding a big black umbrella. I haven't seen her for a while, but I'd recognize her distinguished figure anywhere. What a contrast with me, disheveled after my long journey and dripping wet.
"Georgina, my granddaughter, here you are, finally."
She inspects my outfit.
"These showers haven't helped to scrub you up."
When she notices my trousers, she frowns. At last, she turns to my tutor.
"A good evening, John. Delighted to meet you."
"The pleasure is all mine, madame."
After the luggage is loaded into Granny's Bugatti hardtop convertible, she takes the seat behind the steering wheel. She makes it a point of honour to drive herself, which is unusual for a lady. Behind the windscreen wipers sweeping left and right, I glimpse the moor outside, bathed in dim evening light. Suddenly, Granny turns off the main road and reduces her speed to take a small gravel-covered track. The automobile slowly drives over a black cast-iron grid.
"Do you remember Renée?"
she asks me. I shake my head. The last time that I came to the manor, I was knee-high to a grasshopper.
"He's one of my domestic staff. He lives in the small house next door with his wife and son. He also owns a plot of land near the cliff where he grows delicious vegetables.
The automobile stops. The rain has calmed down. A silhouette descends the front steps.
"There you are at last!"
a man exclaims.
"René, thank you for waiting for us,"
Granny replies.
"With this weather, I wanted to make sure you made it back all right."
René carries the suitcases inside, then leaves us.
"Good night, madame."
Once I'm in my bedroom, I get undressed and fall asleep immediately.
Chapter 2. The Ministry of Mysteries.
John is waiting in the study to do algebra with you, dear.
Granny's voice drags me from my sleep.
And please put on something other than those horrible trousers that you were wearing when you arrived.
What a bore! I had been hoping to have this morning to myself to go for a stroll, and now I barely have time to gulp down a scone before I have to start studying. It's only at the end of the afternoon that John finally lets me have some free time. Granny has gone to play bridge with her club. I immediately seize the opportunity to swap the hideous dress I put on this morning for trousers, far more practical for discovering the moor. I hurry down the stone steps leading out of the back of the manor. Flower beds line either side of an immaculately raked alley. On one bench, a boy who looks my age is sitting and taking in the sun, his eyes closed. When he hears my footsteps on the gravel, he leaps up and puts his cap back on.
"Hello, mademoiselle. I'm the son of René. I've been lending him a hand by trimming the rose bushes."
"Pleased to meet you, son of René."
"My name is Gaston. Gaston Mallet. And you must be Mademoiselle Georgina."
"Yes, but I prefer being called George. And you can drop the mademoiselle too. It'd be far easier, don't you think?" He gazes at me, looking a bit uncertain. His discomfort makes me laugh. Without waiting for his answer, I go on speaking. "I'm looking for a mystery to get my teeth into. Do you have any ideas?"
"Well, there's no shortage of mysteries around here. To start with, you should go for a walk along the customs officer's path following the coastline. It's an ideal viewing point for ships carrying contraband."
"Great! Why don't you come with me?"
Gaston accepts my offer and we set off.
"The weather's changed completely since last night, hasn't it?"
comments my new companion. I agree when I think back to last night's deluge.
"It's always a little bit creepy here when the wind gets rough,"
he continues. "Really?"
"If you enjoy mysteries, then you've come to the right place,"
he says.
"It's because of the shipwreckers."
"The shipwreckers?"
"In the olden days, on stormy nights, penniless men would hang lanterns around the necks of animals, or else shine lanterns from the coast. Sailors would confuse these lights with light from the lighthouse, and their ships would be wrecked on the reefs down there. The shipwreckers would then loot the damaged vessels."
"That's terrible," I say, looking at the rocks below.
"Yes. Some say that it's just a legend, but I'm not so sure."
"What makes you say that?"
"When my father was young, one stormy night, his father's boat was shipwrecked. Several days went by before the sea was calm enough for the boat to be accessed. There were no survivors, and everything was looted, down to the last grain of rice."
He pauses briefly, then adds,
"Ever since, whenever the weather gets rough, Papa gets uneasy. The past haunts him."
After hearing this awful story, I can't help shivering. Suddenly, the wind picks up.
"A squall's coming,"
Gaston announces. We run back to the house. By the time we reach the back steps, heavy raindrops have started hitting my forehead. seem to know all about the mysteries around here. Are there other things you can show me?
Plenty. If you like, we can meet at the end of the day tomorrow.
Fabulous. We could start a club, too, like Granny. His eyes twinkle as he smiles.
In that case, we need a name.
He scratches his chin.
What do you think of the Ministry of Mysteries?
Chapter 3, An Endless Evening.
In the evening, dinner is served early, because afterwards Granny has invited her neighbours, Monsieur and Madame Dubois, to come over to play bridge. During the meal, my grandmother explains that the couple moved into a huge residence nearby during the previous summer. Before that, they lived on the other side of France, on the French Riviera. At 7:30 p.m. sharp, the entrance bell rings. Granny welcomes the guests into the hallway.
What dreadful weather!
Monsieur Dubois remarks, taking off his overcoat.
As I told you earlier on the telephone, my houseman is having his evening off, so tonight will be a simple affair.
Perfect,
Monsieur Dubois replies. Madame Dubois stretches out her hand, and her husband takes it. The diamond on her ring finger sparkles dazzlingly. Noticing Granny look at her ring, Madame Dubois smiles proudly.
Isn't it magnificent? My husband gave it to me this morning. My birthday won't be till Thursday, but it's an early present because he has to leave for a business trip tomorrow.
In a more confidential tone, she adds,
he wants to get into whale tourism, seeing how popular it is at the moment.
A sharp look from her husband silences her chatter and makes her smile fade away. To clear the awkwardness in the air, Granny invites everyone to enter the large drawing room. John, my grandmother and the Dubois sit down at the bridge table. I'm not allowed to play with the adults, even if I'd like to. Reluctantly, I sit down with a book on the leather sofa in the library, which opens out to the drawing room. At least I can observe them all I like. While shuffling the cards, John asks,
have you heard that the famous navigator, Kersantek, is setting off on a new solo crossing?
That's right, Granny replies. I read that in the local newspaper. He's meant to be passing the reefs of Kernavan tonight. If I were him, I'd be feeling nervous in this weather.
The guests lose the first round. Monsieur Dubois walks to the window and back, claiming that he needs to stretch his legs. I think it's because he's a bad loser. In the end, he goes outside to smoke a cigar on the steps as the rain pours down.
Oh,
I'm bored stiff and yawn wide. The evening finishes with the victory of John and Granny. After the rain eases, the Dubois leave and I say goodnight to everyone too. After preparing myself for bed, I observe, through my bedroom window, signs of the approaching storm. The wind builds up until it goes wild, whistling as it attacks trees that resist like stiff elderly gentlemen. The din is deafening and it's pitch dark. Suddenly, I seem to see something. Yes, over there, barely a mile away, on the cliff, a light that continues to shine through the blackness, obscured twice by something passing by. An animal or a human figure? I'm not sure. In this weather, it's impossible to find out any more tonight, so I decide to go to bed. Tomorrow, I'll meet Gaston, and we'll investigate on the moor.
Chapter 4. Storm and Shipwreck.
Today, the sky is blue, the colour of forget-me-nots, with no traces of last night's storm. In the dining room, holding a fine porcelain cup, Granny sips her tea. John is there too. He looks exhausted, as if he hasn't slept a wink. That's strange. The bridge party didn't finish very late. I'm just about to bite into a muffin covered with marmalade when Renee bursts into the room looking upset.
Everyone's talking about it in the village.
His voice fades into a suppressed sob.
There was a shipwreck last night.
Then he adds,
the captain survived, but his boat was looted.
My mouth falls open in astonishment. Granny gets up and switches on the radio that crackles into life. After an ad for a soap brand, a presenter announces a news flash.
Last night, during the fierce storm that raged along the coast, a drama took place. The wealthy amateur yachtsman Jan Kersantak had only just set sail when he suffered a setback. His vessel, the Gwendal, ran aground on the reefs of Kernavan and was then looted. The yacht owner was hospitalized but is not in a critical condition. Some terrified inhabitants see this unfortunate episode as a sign that the shipwreckers are back.
Could this man, Kersantak, have mistaken the light that I saw last night on the cliff for the lighthouse? It's not out of the question, given this fog. In a sharp voice, my grandmother cuts me off.
Georgina, don't let your imagination get carried away.
I'm sorry, I was just talking to myself. She quickly folds up her napkin.
For heaven's sake, don't pay any attention to that nonsense. Stop trying to play detective and concentrate on your studies instead.
During my grammar lesson, my mind wanders at the slightest noise. I can't wait to meet up with my new friend. At last, the clock strikes five. Distractedly, John gives me permission to leave, even though I haven't even finished the set of exercises. I run off immediately. Outside, Gaston is already waiting for me near the rose bushes. I don't lose any time to tell him what I saw last night.
Do you think that someone could have put on a light deliberately?
If that's the case, who could have been capable of something like that? Without replying to my question, he points up the steps.
Mademoiselle George, look. Look.
A tall policeman, as thin as a match, is talking with John, then goes inside the house.
But what's he doing at the manor?
This could be something to do with the shipwreck,
Gaston guesses. If that's the case, why come here? My friend shrugs. I murmur,
first of all, the radio announced a return of the shipwreckers, and now there's a policeman visiting the manor. The mystery is thickening. I have to go and see what's happening.
I'll come with you.
Granny wouldn't like having Gaston walk around the manor, nor having me poke my nose in this business. So I ask my friend to follow me as discreetly as possible. Faint clinking of porcelain and muffled voices come from the drawing room, where Renee serves tea at 5 o'clock every day. Alas! The door is closed, and we are unable to hear what exactly is being said.
I've got an idea, I say to Gaston, leading him to the library. We crawl through the service door and hide behind the sofa. It's an ideal hiding spot from which we can listen without being seen.
Chapter 5. A Setup.
Monsieur Mallet, does this item belong to you?
Gaston jumps with a start when he hears the policeman addressing his father. In a lively, almost childishly joyful tone of voice, Renee replies,
yes.
Unable to resist, Gaston hitches himself up slightly to peek over the sofa and see what is going on.
Have you lost your mind?
I whisper to him. We mustn't be caught spying on the adults. Granny would scold us no end. Gaston sits back down beside me and whispers flatly,
it's his storm lamp. But how did you...
stutters Renee.
I've been looking for it everywhere for the past 3 days. I always store it in my shed.
Gaston and I hold our breaths, waiting to hear what will happen now.
It was found on the cliff near the spot where the yacht collided with the reefs,
explains the policeman.
Beside the lamp, someone had lit a fire. I believe that it's the light from this blaze that is the origin of the Gwendal's shipwreck.
My friend goes as white as a sheet. Suddenly, I feel remorse. Why did I drag him in here to hear all this? The policeman continues his interrogation.
Where were you last night, Monsieur Mallet?
In my home.
Alone?
After a second's hesitation, René replies,
Yes, my wife spent the evening at her sister's with my son. When she saw the weather, she decided that they would stay there overnight.
Gaston buries his head in his hands.
So, you have no alibi, and the proof points to you. You are suspected of lighting the fire that caused the shipwreck and of looting the yacht. You're going to have to follow me.
Gaston's eyes fill with fear. Granny's anger flares.
For goodness sake, René is completely incapable of such a thing.
The policeman interrupts her.
Stay calm, madame. It'll be better for everyone that way. Could someone go and notify Monsieur Mallet's wife?
I'll take care of it,
John replies in a croaky voice. We've heard enough, I whisper. Let's go before they discover that we're here. We sneak out. Outside, night is falling over the garden. I'm sorry that I got you to come here today. If I'd known, I...
Don't worry,
Gaston replies with a shrug.
Whether I found out now or in an hour's time...
Then he adds sadly,
My father wouldn't hurt a fly.
I believe you, Gaston, but unfortunately, things don't look good for him.
Why would he rob a yacht? It doesn't make any sense.
He gazes at me as if I might have the answers to his questions.
My father is innocent.
My brain begins to tick fast. There's something fishy about all this. The lamp found on the cliff is just too obvious. You'd think it was left on purpose. Maybe it's a setup and someone is looking to get your father accused. But in that case, why? Gaston shrugs.
I don't know. But I remember now that yesterday, when I was leaving for my aunt's, I spotted your tutor on the moor.
I opened my mouth in surprise. John?
Yes, on the path, not far from where the boat was found.
Could he be behind all this? Could you have come across him while he was scouting for an ideal spot to light a fire on the cliff? If so, we have to work out his motive. Why would he have organized this shipwreck? And why would he want to harm your father?
We've got our work cut out for us,
Gaston says, looking haggard.
But for now, I have to find my mother. She'll be upset when she hears this news.
Tomorrow, I'll find a way to go in the garden before lunch. Let's meet to compare notes on what we find out. Until then, keep your eyes peeled.
Chapter 6. Searching for the Wrongdoer.
There's no one at the table at breakfast time. A piece of toast has been left behind, as well as a newspaper with an article on the shipwreck on the front page. Jewelry stolen from the Gwendal. I don't have time to read any more when I hear footsteps in the hallway. If Granny catches me reading about the drama, sparks will fly. Without thinking, I conceal the newspaper under my dress. The door opens, just in time. It isn't my grandmother. but John. His nose is red, and the bags under his eyes are even darker than yesterday. I think back to what Gaston told me. Could John have caused the shipwreck? If so, what was his motive? Money? The sound of John's voice drags me out of my own thoughts.
Mademoiselle Georgina!
He sneezes while addressing me.
It's time for your study.
Let's see. Could John have caught a cold during a nighttime outing? I can't concentrate on my work. The image of my tutor slipping outside to loot the boat keeps popping up in my mind. The newspaper scratches me, and the article's headline dances around in my thoughts. I have to read the rest of the article as soon as possible and share this discovery with my fellow detective. This will help us to advance in our investigation, I'm sure. Right in the middle of a geometry exercise, I hear light tapping on the window pane. John is concentrating on something and hears nothing. On the other side of the window, a cap bobs up and down like a jack-in-the-box. It's Gaston. That's strange. It's only 10 o'clock. He's very much ahead of time. I pretend that I have a headache and need some fresh air. To my great surprise, John lets me take a break. Perhaps it suits him, too. I have to tell myself not to run down the hallway. When I arrive in the garden, Gaston is jumping with excitement.
Mademoiselle George, I've got news.
Me too.
You first,
he declares like a good sport. His eyes look on in astonishment as I take the newspaper out from under my dress and unfold it on the bench. Exclusive interview with the wife of yachtsman Jan Kersantek. She tells our readers what happened during the violent storm on the night of March the 21st. My husband is extremely careful with his precious possessions, and he never exposes them to sea air. On his yacht, he therefore is in the habit of removing them. Being superstitious like many seafarers, he always puts them away in the same spot, his signet ring among his toiletry items, and his gold pocket watch in the cupboard of the galley. His signet ring disappeared, but thankfully the watch wasn't stolen. Amid the misfortune that my husband suffered, this was a source of relief.
It doesn't make sense,
Gaston cries out.
Why would a thief steal a signet ring but not take a watch? Apparently it's a valuable one.
You're right. And on a yacht, there aren't many hiding places. Any thief who knows what he's doing will be able to find all of them, that's for sure.
Someone wants to make it look like a robbery.
And this someone wants to make people think that your father is responsible.
We're barking up the wrong tree with John,
Gaston cuts me off.
I think I know who it is.
He hops from one leg to the other, proud of the effect of his announcement on me.
Last night, my mother couldn't sleep a single wink,
he continues.
She was worried sick thinking about where she'd find money to get a lawyer. And would you believe that this morning, as if by chance, she got a visit from Monsieur Dubois?
Monsieur Dubois? Interesting. That evening, when the couple came over to play bridge, he couldn't sit still. Okay, and then?
She invited him in and sent me outside so that they can talk in peace.
That's all?
Of course not. I'm just playing with you. I listened at the door,
he says, winking at me. And? I'm really curious now.
He came back to offer to buy the plot of land where my parents grow a vegetable garden.
What do you mean, came back?
It wasn't the first time that he'd offered to buy the land. My mother has nothing against the idea, but my father doesn't want to sell it. His vegetable garden is quite something. This time, given what's happened, my mother had no choice. Dubois made her sign a piece of paper for the sale and gave her money.
That's no accident. This was all part of a plan. Then I add thoughtfully, so he's the one who caused the shipwreck? And the motive is the plot of land? Dubois is rich. He can buy whatever he wants. Why does he want this piece of land in particular?
No idea. The only thing I know is that this man is a crook.
We need to find proof that he planned it all. I think that we really need to pay him a visit.
Tonight?
Exactly. The noose is tightening, Gaston. Meet you at midnight for a special operation of the Ministry of Mysteries.
Chapter 7. A Nocturnal Visit.
Scarcely is dessert over when John tells us in a hoarse voice,
"With all this heavy rain, I got a cold the other day when I was walking around. Please excuse me, but I need to go and rest now."
Poor John, he looks very poorly. And to think that we'd placed him on the list of suspects for having a cold and a stroll on the coastal path. It's my turn to bid Granny good night. In my bedroom, I change into a pair of trousers and a jacket. When I hear my grandmother going to her bedroom, I creep back down the stairs. Before going out, I rummage through drawers in the hallway looking for a torch. It's past midnight when I meet up with Gaston. To avoid being seen, we cross the moor by moonlight. An owl hoots in the distance. When we spot the Dubois residence, we hide behind a shrub to observe the premises. I can't see any automobiles parked nearby. Monsieur Dubois must have left for his business trip as scheduled. Gaston, I murmur, if you were Dubois and you wanted to hide something, where would you put it? In a serious tone, he replies,
under my pillow, without a doubt.
And then he continues,
it's a joke. If I were Dubois, there'd be many rooms in my house. So, in my desk.
Suddenly, he points at a room upstairs. Look, there! A light is on. Someone isn't in bed yet. His wife or a servant, perhaps. We should wait till all the lights are switched off before we go inside. Let's hope that in one of the rooms on the ground floor, a window has been left open. It's 1 in the morning by the time that the residence finally plunges into darkness. With my heart racing, I switch on my torch and we emerge from the shadows. I push one window. It's closed. Then a second one, closed too. Our plan is not going as expected. We're going to have to turn back. Suddenly, I hear Gaston cheering softly.
Over here! There's a window that's still half open.
I hitch myself up first. From the smell that dominates this room, I deduce that I've arrived in the smoking parlour. Gaston climbs in too, but as he passes his leg through the opening, his foot slips and causes the window to slam loudly against the wall. One moment later, footsteps are heard in the hallway. Quick! Both of us take cover behind an armchair and hold our breaths. I switch off my torch. The door opens. That was close. A servant goes up to the window and closes it, then goes out again. We breathe a sigh of relief. When we exit the smoking parlour, we find ourselves in a hallway leading to several different rooms. Gaston tries the doors on the right and I the ones on the left. Suddenly I whisper, "Psst! The study is over there." We divide up the tasks for our search. I attack the drawers and Gaston the files on the shelves. After an hour, we still haven't found anything, not the slightest clue. I can feel discouragement overtaking us when my gaze falls on a painting. Something about it looks funny. That painting, it's not straight.
Well spotted, Mademoiselle George.
We gently lift it off its hook and discover, behind it, a safe hidden in the wall. Each of us tries different combinations, but our efforts come to nothing. Being forced to give up when we're so close to the goal is extremely frustrating. Suddenly I cry out, "Of course, Gaston! What's the date today?"
"It's March the 23rd. Or rather, no, it's been March the 24th for a few hours now. Thursday, March the 24th. What are you thinking?"
"On Monday, during the bridge party, Madame Dubois told us that her birthday would be on the following Thursday. In other words, today, March the 24th. I hold my breath and try the combination. 2, 4, 0, 3.
Chapter 8. An Unexpected Outcome.
The safe opens with a click. Gaston looks at me with admiration and I swell up with pride. Inside, there's money, a rolled-up piece of paper, as well as a small golden object that gleams in the dark. I pick it up gently. "Gaston!" I exclaim, with excitement and fear mingling in my voice. "It looks like Jan Kersantak's signet ring!" My friend takes the ring and examines it.
"YK. His initials are engraved on it. There's no doubt. Dubois is our culprit. But I still don't understand why he did it."
I unroll the piece of paper on the desk. We study it silently until I realize what it is. It's a plan for the construction of a hotel. The front of the building is labeled.
"Well, well, this Thermal Baths Hotel would have quite a view of the ocean. But what has it got to do with my father?"
I examine the plan a few seconds more, then cry out, "So that's it! The hotel is to be located exactly where your father's vegetable patch is."
"At last! We have proof that that crook planned everything."
I roll up the document and stuff the signet ring in my pocket while Gaston shuts the safe and puts the painting back in place. Lingering no more, we go out through the window holding the precious roll of paper. Once we're back on the moor, I say, "Dubois wanted a sea view for his hotel, and your parents' land was the ideal spot."
"The only problem was that my father didn't want to sell the land. That's why Dubois orchestrated things so that my parents had no choice. Once my father was arrested, my mother was forced to sell the land to Dubois in order to get money to pay the lawyer's fees."
"Elementary, my dear Gaston. But what Dubois didn't foresee was the skill of the detectives from the Ministry of Mysteries." We laugh heartily. The first light of dawn brightens the sky.
"What shall we do now, Mademoiselle George?"
"We have to go to the police station." We soon reach the village. The policeman from the day before opens the door, looking angry at being dragged out of bed so early. He has trouble believing what we tell him. He reprimands us severely for our nocturnal excursion. It's clear that he wants to kick us out and to go back to bed. But when we take out the signet ring and unroll the compromising document before his eyes, he's forced to acknowledge that an innocent man is behind bars while the true culprit roams free. At the breakfast table, Granny places a newspaper between the two of us. The paper's headlines announce, "Unexpected outcome of the Gwendal shipwreck case. Thanks to the intervention of two children, René Mallet's name was cleared and Dubois was imprisoned. The wealthy landowner was arrested this morning in front of the Grand Hotel in Dinard.
He confessed immediately that he had caused the yacht to run aground. Dubois wanted to implicate René Mallet as the wrongdoer in order to be able to extort from him a plot of land on which he planned to build a luxury hotel. I don't even have time to swallow a mouthful of tea when someone knocks on the dining room door. Gaston advances, holding his cap in one hand.
You wanted to see me, madame?
Granny unfolds the newspaper.
René told me about how this case ended. Well done, children. You took great risks by going out at night, but you carried out your investigation admirably. So I've decided to give both of you a day off.
That's good timing, Gaston whispers to me.
We need to rest up again for the future missions of the Ministry of Mysteries.
René enters the room at that moment, carrying a basket full of supplies. Seeing my dress, Granny says to me,
For a picnic on the beach, wouldn't you be more comfortable in trousers?
The end.